One of the most interesting things whenever I've traveled, especially outside of the United States, is that every country, every group kind of does things a little bit differently than we do here in America. And I'm going to admit, there's one thing that, especially when we've gone to Europe, we've gone to Greece, we've gone to Italy, we've gone to Germany. Oh, sorry, we're going to Germany, Greece, Malta. One of the things that always surprises me every time we go is how they handle food. So one time, Heather and I, we were in Greece, and we had moved to another hotel, and you know, like dumb Americans, right? We don't eat properly, so it's like 5 o'clock, and Heather and I, if you don't know, we're kind of like old people, and so that's why we go to Owls. So it's like 5 o'clock, right? And now it's like, it's time to eat, which is funny because in so many other places, 5 o'clock is like, you're not even close to dinner time. Like, dinner starts at 7:30. I can't eat at 7:30. I get really bad heartburn, so it never works for me. So we go to this place, and we walk up, and there's a guy, and he invites us to come and sit. And so we sit, and we are famished. And so we start ordering a bunch of stuff, and he just kind of looks at us, and he goes, okay. So then he comes back, and all he comes back with is our drinks. And then he starts talking to us. And so we're like, okay. And then he comes back and he has just a little bit of grilled garlic bread with some tzatziki. And I'm like, dude, I'm about to eat your face off. Like, I need some food. And so we finally said, look, we're really hungry. Can you like bring us the food? And he goes, oh yeah, that's right. Americans, yes, yeah. And so He did. He was very kind. And like literally we just like devoured the food. And then of course you get really sleepy. And so it's like, okay, we're done. And you know what, 90 minutes for a meal. That's about what we do in America, especially because you need to recycle the tables real fast. And so he looked at us as we're getting ready to leave. He says, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you guys come tomorrow? And I want you to eat like we eat. And we're like, well, what does that mean? He's like, you gotta like if you want to eat at 5, like why don't you show up at 3? And then you'll be done by around 8. And I'm like, 5 hours of eating? And he's like, well, no, it's not 5 hours of eating. It's you come, you hang out, you talk, you visit. The guy had his whole family was there. We had kids running around. He like comes up at one point. He's like, hey, do you want to have some octopus? And I'm like, sure. He goes, great. He literally reaches into a tank and there is an octopus right there. He kills it and grills it right on the thing. And I'm like, oh my, like this is fresh. And we're talking and the kids running around and we literally were there for, about 4 or 5 hours. And we're like, oh, this is kind of nice because when you get a chance to slow down, it's a little more fun because for us, everything is, we want, when do we want it? And we want everything like now. When do you want a girlfriend?
Now.
Wow. That was very enthusiastic there, Robert. All right. Woo! When do we want that new job? Yeah, right? We want everything right now. When do we want our family members to believe in Jesus?
Now.
When do we want our church to grow?
Now.
When do we want a grandbaby? You said that out loud, yeah. You purposely, yeah. When do you want it 10 years ago? Yeah. We are a very impatient group of people, and it's really interesting watching Jesus because Jesus goes by his own timing. Everything he does is very purposeful, and there is a great and wonderful plan. And so the basic concept for today is God has a plan, and his timing is perfect. And it's when we get in and try to mess things up that things often go awry. And you're going to see Jesus and his timing. I mean, he even has timing about when to go to feasts or festivals. He is very purposeful. So I know that we are people that want things now, but you know what we should do is we should slow everything way down. We should be thinking a little bit more in the future. We should be thinking about trusting that God's timing is perfect in our life, and when things are supposed to happen, they will, in fact, happen. We're now in the third feast that Jesus starts to reframe for people. We're going to be talking about the Feast of Tabernacles. It's a really fun feast. I personally don't think I would ever celebrate this feast simply because it involves camping. And I was a Boy Scout, I was an Eagle Scout. I went camping a lot, and I think I got all camped out through high school. And now it's like, oh, let's pay a mortgage, right, for my house, and then let's leave that house for the night and go into a tent that's very flimsy and sleep on a cot that is not comfortable or on the ground, which isn't comfortable, and then have to get up in the middle of the night and find somewhere where there's a bathroom. And then you're constantly dirty, you're constantly tired, you're constantly cold. Like, it's just, yeah, Steve's with me too. I agree. Yeah. But this is what the Feast of Tabernacles was all about. It was a commemoration of the time that the Israelites wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. They were literally only 10 miles from their promised land. But because of their disobedience, God made them walk for 40 years. And while they were doing that, as they were living out, they were obviously camping essentially the whole time. And so what they did was they created this Feast of Tabernacles where you would have create a shelter, often connected to your own house, but it was only supposed to have three sides and then no roof, or if there was a roof, it would be only partial, so that you would be feeling like you are outside, and to remember that even through the challenging times, God was with them. And that was for everyone to remember. And so they would have these wonderful feasts, and then it would all be the celebration. You would often not be working during the time of the Feast of the Tabernacles. Kids were often really involved in it because there were kids wandering through the wilderness as well. And then it ended up with a big religious ceremony, and I'll dive more into the religious ceremony because Jesus is going to do that next week, where they're, you know, taking water and they're pouring this water out, and Jesus is going to come and give a new interpretation to it. So this Feast of Tabernacles is one of these required feasts that all the Jewish people were supposed to be a part of, especially the Jewish men. The Jewish men were required to at least try to attend one of these, if not multiple, taking the trip to Jerusalem in order to celebrate this. So we're now at the time of the Feast of the Tabernacles. That's what it's on my heading on John 7. It says Jesus goes to the Feast of Tabernacles. So after that, Jesus went round in Galilee, purposely staying away from Judea because the Jews there were waiting to take his life. Again, remember, this is all because of the healing at the Pool of Bethesda. Remember, he heals someone. What day of the week did he heal? Sabbath. That's why they're trying to kill him. So again, he's reframing probably one of the greatest holidays for a Jewish person is that Sabbath, and he heals on the Sabbath, and he does it purposely. And remember, afterwards the guy gets healed and he's like, take your mat and walk. And he's like, okay. So he's walking and someone's like, hey, you're not supposed to be carrying your mat. It's the Sabbath day. How dare you? And he's like, I don't know, man. Like, I got healed. Like, I was paralyzed and some dude came up to me and said, walk. And so I did. And then he said, pick up your mat and leave. So you know what I did? I picked up my mat and I left. This guy has something to him that I'm going to listen to. And they're like, really? Who is this guy? And he actually at the time didn't even know the dude's name. And he's like, not too sure, but Jesus finds him later on. And then later on, the guy goes and tells the people, like, oh yeah, the person that did it, Jesus. He's right over, he's the glowing guy right over there. Right, yeah. Yeah, he's glowing. Everyone's like attracted to him. He's really handsome. He's got a six pack. He's got great abs. That's the one that is the one that healed me. And from that point on, they were really upset and they wanted to kill him. Like, again, it's really interesting what we sometimes get crazy about, especially in religious circles. The breaking of a Sabbath rule is worthy of someone dying. Like, we must kill him. It's crazy. So they are all looking for him. They know he's a Jew. They know that it's important for him to, is everything okay?
No.
Oh. Oh, you okay, Sydney? You're fine? All right. All right, no one look at Sydney. I know how it is. Like when something bad happens, you're like, ah, I just fell. All right. There we go. Way to go, son. You're a good son. Yeah. All right. All right. Okay. Okay. Whew. All right. We'll dive back into this. Where am I at? Oh, they're looking to kill Jesus. They want him dead. It's really sad. It's really depressing that they would do something like this, but they are just, they want him dead. So Jesus is purposely staying away from the area of people that want to kill him, which is, again, kind of strange. It almost seems as if Jesus isn't up for the fight. Now, that couldn't be anything further from the truth. Jesus does his old thing, but is it his time to die yet? No, it's not his time to die. So he's going to make sure that everything goes according to the plan that God has. And so it's interesting. So verse 2, but when the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles was near, Jesus' brothers said to him, you ought to leave here and go to Judea so that your disciples may see the miracles you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world. So first of all, Jesus did in fact have brothers. All right, he had several brothers that we know of. We also know that he had some sisters. And so we know that Mary and Joseph had children beyond the miraculous birth of Jesus. And so, again, and I always, you're talking about it as we're driving, and it's always funny. It would be funny to be one of Jesus' brothers, right? Like the mom, Mary, she's always like, ah, Joseph, why can't you be a little bit more like your brother Jesus, right? Yeah. Yeah, and then I heard one pastor say this, and I thought that was great. I think this is where the merchandise, the WWJD bracelets, I think Mary started it. I think she handed it out to all her kids like, hey, all you kids, just what would Jesus do in this situation? He would be perfect, right? And so being the brother of Jesus must have been a very difficult thing. So we know at this point they're telling him, hey, Jesus, if you want to be this public figure, you really need to go to the Feast of Tabernacles because that's where there's going to be a lot of people there and you really should show yourself. And at first blush, this almost seems kind of nice. Like, hey, the brothers are like, Jesus, here's the right thing to do. We're just thinking out for what's best for you. But if you ever need an interpretation of what they were trying to do, they were just mocking him. The next verse tells us exactly what it says. For even his own brothers did not believe him. Now, again, I think this is super helpful. If you have family members who are not believers, because when do we want the family members to believe in Jesus? We want it now. We want it done. Jesus could not even evangelize his own family. So sometimes we get really concerned. We feel like maybe it's our fault. Our kids are crazy and wild and strange, and they're not following after Jesus, and we get so upset. And we often take that on ourselves. But again, sometimes it's about timing. Because out of curiosity, did Jesus' brothers always reject him? No. In fact, several of the disciples became really staunch followers of Jesus. It was really impressive to watch. In fact, if you know, I always love talking to Leroy about this. James, his brother, he's the dude that wrote the book called James. He had just a really cool nickname. Do you remember? Yeah, Camel's Knees, right? So because he prayed so much, he would always be on his knees, and his knees got really gross and knobby and stuff like that because he was. And then he had another brother, Judah, and that dude wrote a book of the Bible as well. So Jesus' brothers ultimately did believe. And this is one of those where, again, praying for God's timing, especially when it comes to those who don't believe. I struggle with this too. Whenever I'm out and about, I'll probably be thinking about it today as a group of college students will go out and learn what does it mean to talk to people about my faith? What does it mean to share who Jesus is? And that becomes really difficult because what we think is going to happen is we're going to meet someone who doesn't know Jesus and we're going to be like, hey, let me tell you about Jesus, what he did in my life. He saved me. He loves me. He cares for me. He orders my step. He guides me. He has forgiven me of all of my sins. I have received him, and he is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I want you to also have that same exact experience. And what we expect for them to say is, wow, that was so well reasoned. Your logic is perfect. Everything is great. Oh, I feel a burning in my heart. And you're like, that's the Holy Spirit. And they're like, oh, this is wonderful. And then you just watch, you know, person after person after person come to faith in Jesus. That's what we think's going to happen. Again, it's like that old, I never got a chance to play the video game, but I've talked about it before. That video game where you would evangelize, like on the video game, you would just have to get close to them. And all of a sudden, like they're like dressed in black and they're like gnarly and gross. And then you're all dressed in white and you're carrying your Bible around and you just like stand near someone. All of a sudden they become a Christian. You're like, this is amazing. How many people does that actually happen to? It's normally not that quick. Now, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, because it does. But I'm saying for the majority of the times when I've had people who were not believers who then became believers, it was a very long, drawn-out process, a lot of relationship building, a lot of caring, a lot of praying for them, until ultimately they do, in fact, come to faith. And when that happens, it is a wonderful and glorious experience. But Jesus could not even have his own brothers believe in him. Now, if Jesus can't, then maybe you should cut yourself a little bit of slack and maybe trust and pray in God's perfect timing. Because again, the early church was built upon many of Jesus' own siblings. They became in quick succession leaders of the church, people who at one time mocked him. One time they came to him and they're like, oh, we're here to pick up Jesus. Just so you know, he's a little crazy, right? Could you imagine that? If I was Jesus and, you know, my brothers just called me crazy, man, boom, they'd be smote dead. Like there'd be sulfur and brimstone and that big meteor would come and just smash right on their face. That's how I would... Yeah, but then where's Mary, right? WWJD, what would Jesus do? Yes, I know he would pray for them, he would love them, and he'd be wonderful. Yeah, and that's an important thing, because what would Jesus do in those things? He shares and he gives those things, but he doesn't get into this long, drawn-out argument. So they're saying, hey, you should go and do this. And again, I don't know how much mocking, or if it's maybe they were testing, like, you say you're the Messiah, but shouldn't the Messiah show themselves? So go and show yourselves. But at this point, they do not believe. So what happens? Verse 6, Jesus tells them, the right time for me has not yet come. For you, any time is right. Every time I've read that always hits me, right? When you say a prayer request, when would you like the prayer request answered? And we also want it to be always in the yes form. But that's not how God operates. I told you last week of a pastor friend of mine. He worked, been in the district for a while. He's one of the vice presidents of the district. And I told you that I was praying for him because he wasn't probably going to last through the month. He had a heart infection. He was waiting for a heart transplant. Well, this past week, I then got an email that he wasn't probably going to last the evening. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning on Monday, he passed away. Now, I prayed for him. And when did I want that prayer request answered? Now. And I want it to be answered in the yes. I want it to be, Lord, please heal Dustin. I worry for his wife. I worry for their son, William. And I just want it, and I want it now. And we do that all the time when it comes to prayers. When do you want your prayers answered? Any time is a good time for us. Lord, we pray for our finances. We want to be independently wealthy and not have to do anything ever again in life. And I would love if you could accomplish that at this exact moment in time. Lord, I want to have a different career path, and the one I'm in is I'm really struggling with. I hate it. My boss is terrible. I hate going in. Lord, show me another job and show it to me now so I can get out. Lord, I'm really sick right now, and I'm really struggling because I have this nasty cough, and it's been with me for so long, and I just wish you would give me some healing. We just want to know. Jesus says for you the time is always right, but for God it is not. God's timing is perfect. His will is perfect. His plan is perfect. Do you know that he has a plan for you? He does. And you may not know it. You may not understand it. You may be really struggling with it. But let me tell you, it is really incredible to watch when God does things. He always seems to do that in ways better than we could have ever imagined it to be. I think that learning how to trust that God is in control is really super important. So he keeps going. Very interesting statements he makes. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that what it does is evil. You go to the feast. I'm not yet going up to the feast because for me the right time has not yet come. So he's like, you guys, you don't understand how it means to have the world hate you because I'm going to come and I'm going to testify that things that they're doing is evil, such as trying to kill someone for healing someone. That is evil. That is not the way to actually do that. In fact, you should be following and loving healing, and you should also be following after God. And you've created God in your own image, and God is revealing himself to you, and you're not receiving that information. That's the reason why the world loves you, is because you're not standing up and saying that something is wrong. And so again, saying, you go to the feast. And again, as groups would go to the feast, they'd often go in these large caravans. And so Jesus is not going to do this. He says, having said this, he stayed in Galilee. So verse 10, however, after his brothers had left for the feast, he went also not publicly, but in secret. Now at the feast, the Jews were watching for him and asking, where is this man? Among the crowds, there was widespread whispering about him. Some said, he is a good man. Others replied, no, he deceives the people. But no one would say anything publicly about him for fear of the Jews. So this became one of the hot topic issues of the day. What is your stance on Jesus? And again, Jesus is going to make that stance really clear in a little bit. But right now, it's just murmuring. It's just talking. People are wondering, what do we do this? A bunch of them are like, I don't like that he disrupts my lifestyle. I don't like that he's changing things. I don't like that he healed on a Sabbath. The Sabbath is sacred. That is wrong. I don't like that he tells us that we are not followers of God because we are followers of God, and how dare he say anything about us. I don't like that he points out our sin. That is offensive to me. But that's what Jesus does. He is going to challenge where we're at, and what we are going to think about him is an important thing. I'm going to say one thing. It'll be super quick. If you ever want to read more about what theologians call the trilemma, he is a good man, right? I think if you poll most religious people, like it doesn't matter if you're Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, Baha'i, like anybody, or even people that are like, I just believe the stars are talking to me. If you poll most people, they'll say Jesus was a good man, right? Jesus did good things. But the problem is that is never an option that God has allowed for us. If Jesus is a good man and nothing more, then your logic is flawed. And here's the reason why. Jesus also claimed to be God. If I claim to be God, does that put me in the good man category? No, that puts me in the crazy category, right? If I start saying, hey, everyone, start believing in me, believe in Mark Manning. I am God in the flesh here, right? Right now, a lot of you are starting to lean back in case some lightning bolt comes down and zaps me. Lord, this is for illustration purposes only, please. If I say that I'm God, I either have to prove it or I'm crazy. The choice that Jesus is a good man is not a choice we can have. Good men don't go around saying they're God in the flesh. And so you have to look at what he says, what he does, and then determine, is he God or not? That's the big thing. Because a lot of people have a lot of different viewpoints on him, and it's really interesting as they get into this. So verse 14, not until halfway through the feast did Jesus go up to the temple courts and began to teach. So Jesus did go to the temple. Jesus did do these things. He went up for the Feast of Tabernacles, but he didn't do it in big fanfare. He didn't do it with a lot of pomp and circumstance. That's going to come later. But he's going in there quietly, which again, a lot of people probably hated. A lot of his followers were like, why are you not just going in and being cool? What is wrong with you? It was great also talking with Joshua this morning as we're driving in, and we were talking about Judas, and I had mentioned that I did a drama years ago. Well, actually, a friend of mine did a drama, John, and he did Judas, and it had one of the best opening lines of a monologue that I ever heard. He comes out, and he's like, hi, my name is Judas, and let's get one thing straight. It wasn't for the money. And he goes on to talk about his goal was to have Jesus show himself. Now, I think money was definitely a factor. I mean, the only times we hear about Judas is that he's stealing from God or he's betraying God for 30 pieces of silver. So money is definitely a factor. But if you were someone who was thinking of the timing of God and you saw Judas, you would think, what a wonderful, holy man of God. He's following Jesus. He's one of his disciples. He's one of the close ones. He seems to have care for the poor. And so you would look at these people, and it would be the same thing if you looked at Paul. As he started off with Saul, how good of a man is Saul? He's a bad man. He kills people. But that's not God's timing. God has a timing for Saul where everything is going to be changed for him. So again, this could be for you as well. As you are frustrated with the timing of God, just trust, pray, rely on God has a plan, and let that guide you. So he goes up there, he's teaching in the courts, verse 15. The Jews were amazed and asked, how did this man get such learning without having studied, right? It's incredible that I think some of the smartest theologians that I've ever met were ones that never went to the seminary. I mean, some of the things that I've heard are incredible. Now, again, it's not to speak ill of the seminary, right, Ben? We love the seminary. Seminary's great. But I always do pray that when we send you to the seminary that you come out and you're not totally crazy after all the stuff that you learn in there. And this is what Jesus is struggling with, because did Jesus go to rabbi school? No. He followed in his dad's footsteps. So he never went to rabbi school, yet he was able to talk theological things, and people were amazed by it. And so they're struggling with what do we do with this guy, because he shouldn't be that smart. And so Jesus answered them, my teaching is not my own, it comes from him who sent me. If anyone chooses to do God's will, he will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. I love this. This is always a great challenge for me, because Jesus essentially says, try it before you buy it. Like if you do what I ask, you will discover very quickly if that is God's will. Oh, you want to date someone. Okay, do that according to God's will and see how that works. Oh, you're looking to retire. You know, well, what happens if you have your life built on what God wants and that you're now free to serve his people? That would be fantastic. Give it a shot. You mean maybe I should share my faith with someone else? You know what? Just give it a try. I mean, literally, what is the worst that can happen? Jesus gives a challenge to all of us. Don't just look at it and think about it, but actually give it a shot. And if you give it a shot, you're going to determine really quickly how God's will is superior and great. Because how many of us here, you don't raise your hand, How many of you, us here, have gone against God's will and it turned out extremely poorly for us? Yeah. So, let's do it God's way. Wouldn't that be incredible? Give that a shot. So he's like, test this out and see what it is. And he says, he who speaks on his own does so to gain honor for himself, but he who works for the honor of the one who sent me as a man of truth, there's nothing false about him. Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me? In comes conspiracy theory Jesus. I love this. Because he's talking to them, and he's like, look, I just do what God is telling me to do, and some of you are really not doing, some of you are breaking the law. And by the way, why are you trying to kill me? And what is their response? We're not trying to kill you, Jesus. Right? They actually said, you are demon-possessed, the crowd answered. Who is trying to kill you? Right? And I wonder if he like just stopped and started staring at a few people. Yeah, you. That they're worried about him because they're like, why do you think someone's killed? Were people out to kill him? People were out to kill him. They were gaslighting. Yeah, this is the first example of gaslighting in Scripture. Well, I'm sure there's probably some in the Old Testament, lots in the Old Testament. But yeah, people are gaslighting Jesus. Who's trying to? And then they start saying he's demon-possessed because, again, that's what happens. If you can't explain Jesus as God in the flesh, if you have to say that he is not God, then really one of the other options that you have is he must be working for the devil, right? Is the devil able to do good works? To do good signs, to do some wonders that might even deceive the elect if it were possible. Yeah, the devil's got a great bag of tricks. He can do a lot of really cool stuff. If you ever want to take a look at it, I suggest rereading the story of the 10 plagues and how people were able to imitate but not duplicate all that God does, because it's always just a little bit shallow and wrong. So again, they're just coming to logical conclusions. If this person is not God, if he's claiming to be God and he's not, then he must be crazy or he's demon-possessed. But there were people that were there that were listening, because they did. They wanted him dead. They wanted him dead bad. And this is what he says. I love this argument. It's an argument that we often don't talk about. Jesus said to them, I did one miracle and you are all astonished. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision, though actually it did not come from Moses but from the patriarchs, it's Genesis, it preceded Moses. Moses, but the patriarchs, you circumcise a child on the Sabbath. Yeah, so imagine you just gave birth to a child and it's a Friday. When are you supposed to circumcise the child? Eighth day. So that would put it on a Saturday. And so they had to do, what are they, like, is this work? Is it work to circumcise someone? Yeah, it's work. And he's like, wait a second, you just said you can't do it. You guys will cut a man's flesh on a Saturday, but I come and heal someone who's paralyzed and I restore him to full health and you want to kill me? Have you ever thought that about your life, how sometimes inconsistent we are because we want God to do what we want him to do, even if it is the very thing that would be damaging to us? We get amazed that God does things, or we get upset that God doesn't do things the way we want them to do, and so we scream and we yell and we moan and we bellyache and we're like, this is wrong, and God, what's wrong with you, and why aren't you doing this, and I can't handle this anymore, and God's like, are you kidding me? I put the stars into motion. I set the oceans, and then I said, here you can come and no further. I gave each of the stars a name. Do you know every one of their names? And here we are complaining about our lives. And yet God says, I got a plan. And it's good. So he's challenging the Sabbath notion, saying, now, if a child can be circumcised on the Sabbath so that the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing a whole man on the Sabbath? This is fantastic. What a great argument. He does another time when he says, "If who of you, if your animal falls into a ditch, on the Sabbath, what do? Well, you quickly look around and find if there's a religious person watching you because you don't want to get in trouble. And then you quickly get the animal out because you don't want the animal to stay in there and possibly die if it fell in, broke a leg, and it needs medical treatment. You need to get it out and you need to take care of it. God gives us these things not for our punishment, but for our benefit. And he says, you're breaking the law just by doing this. And then he gives this really searing indictment to us. And I think this is helpful. The final verse. Stop judging by mere appearances and make a right judgment. I forgot the book. Heather, you probably remember it. There was a book that was written where a guy talks about how, and I hate the phrase, so I'm only going to say it once and that's it, but we all need like a paradigm shift. And it talks about how he was on this, I think it was a subway or he was on a train in New York City, and he was looking over and he saw this mom. No, it was a dad. Saw this dad and he had these three kids. And of course, since dad's taking care of them, how good are the kids? Oh, they're wild. They're rambunctious. They're running around. They're causing all these issues and people are kind of scowling at him. And the dad is just kind of standing there and not doing anything. And finally, Stephen Covey. Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Yeah, this is how he starts the whole book. Man, I can't believe that just synapses. Thank you, Lord. He said that he saw this guy and he was getting really upset because, I mean, why is the dad not doing anything, right? And we do that too. We look at people in their lives and we quickly pass some judgments on them. Oh, yeah, that person isn't following God. Oh, but that person is. And, oh, I don't like what you're doing, and I don't like what you're doing. And this person, you know, maybe they need to clean up their life, and that person dresses like a homeless person, so they probably are a homeless person, probably don't believe in Jesus, but they're someone, and they dress really good. They must be really super and holy. And we make all these judgments, and that's what this guy was doing until he actually went up and talked to the guy, and they were on their way back from the hospital because his wife had just died. And all of a sudden, now this makes sense. People were looking at Jesus making these judgments. You're crazy. You've got a demon. And Jesus is like, why are you judging in that way? And why are you judging the timing of things? We all want things, we all want them now. Jesus has a plan. He had a plan for his death. He does this in the middle of the feast so he doesn't have any issues. He's going to have some issues next week, but guess what's going to happen? It's not his time to die. The time is not right. He will die when he says he's going to die. And then he will rise when he says he's going to rise. And he is going to love you and he is going to care for you. Maybe not in the way that you want it or the way you think you need it, but in the way that is best for you. If I'm going to put my whole life into the hands of a man, it will be the one who gave his life for me, the one who set the stars in place, the one who keeps everything good. Give it a shot. Try it out. Follow after God and see what happens. You may not like the timing, but his timing is perfect.